of this podcast? Support us by leaving us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Hit the link in the episode description to support us now. Thanks for listening and enjoy.
Rolando, I have a question.
Yeah, what's up?
Did you ever watch Nick at Night growing up?
Yeah, I did.
So, do you remember how every night used to have a theme?
Like, they would pick a show and just play marathons of it?
Yep.
Yes.
Do you remember the shows? And what days they were on?
I don't remember the days they were on. I remember I Love Lucy.
Mondays.
I think Gilligan's Island, was that one of them?
At one point, I mean, shows went in and out for sure.
Right.
So, but, all right, continue.
That's it. Those are the ones I remember. Oh, I Dream of Jeannie, I think, was also one of them.
Yeah, Bewitched Be Wednesdays.
Uh-huh. Bewitched Be Wednesdays. Okay, that's cute.
Sometimes it was like, you know, the Monsters Mondays and stuff.
Okay.
But there were some shows that I just like, it was because of Nick at Night that I got to watch. You know, I Love Lucy, Bewitched. And one of them was being The Wonder Years, because at one point The Wonder Years became part of Nick at Night's repertoire.
Interesting.
Yeah, which, you know, was actually probably one of their newer shows that they had shown in, you know, early aughts, late 90s, since The Wonder Years,
right.
You know, even though it takes place in the 60s, is not that old of a show, which right. to me was kind of a,
like a
I couldn't
mind.
Believe it when I found that out, yeah, because like I thought it was from the 60s. Yeah.
Is it because it looks so authentically 60s?
Yeah, and like when you're younger, you can't really tell the difference of when something was, unless it's like black and white, you
right,
know?
Right, right, right.
So, but yeah, so that was my first introduction to The Wonder Years, and it was something that I hadn't actually revisited until very recently for this episode, and it's just, you know, all the memories, just like in the show, just came flooding back for me.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been an interesting week.
For me, it was all my preconceived notions came flooding back in for me.
Okay, I like that, and I can't wait to discuss more, which we'll be doing today, by discussing the original Wonder Years show and the new 2021 reboot. I'm Nicole.
I'm Rolando.
And this is Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals.
An original podcast
about unoriginality. So sadly, listeners, today it will be just me and Rolando.
Yes.
Our producer, Eddie Z, is absent for the night due to workload. And, you know, he's usually there for, like, the sitcoms from the 70s and 80s and being their champion and stuff. So, you know, we're sad that he won't be here because this is kind of like one of his perfect episodes. But he'll be here maybe next week.
I'm watching The Wonder Years with Eddie, though. I can tell you that he did not care for these shows. At least the original,
oh.
I should say. He did not care. Like, I could not engage with him about the original whatsoever. Like, he's just like, it's fine. It wasn't my thing.
Wow. I'm actually kind of shook right now because that's just not what I would have anticipated.
So, you know what? Maybe we'll do a special edition where we talk to him on Instagram Live and just be like, why did you hate Wonder Years growing up?
Yeah, maybe we will.
Maybe we will.
But, you know, before we get into today's episodes, we actually have some news, right, Rolando?
I have announcements and news. The first thing I want to share, everybody, go check out our website, remakesrebootsrevivals.com. It got a nice facelift, and I'm so excited to share with you guys. You can find our contact information there, a little bit of a write-up of our podcast. Although, you guys are listeners, you probably know all about it. But you can check out all the episodes on our website. So please go check it out, remakesrebootsrevivals.com. It just looks so pretty. I figured, like, you know what? People should go check it out. And then the second thing I want to announce is me and Eddie's dog, Nico. He is a finalist for Tale of the Year. And you know what? I'm going to get every listener out there to try. I'm going to make the case for you guys to vote for him. Tale of the Year is, a beauty pageant for dogs. And Nico is a finalist. He's me and Eddie's puppy. And you know what? We really want to win. I'm becoming a show mom, Nicole. I saw it in the cards and I understood the assignment and I'm taking it on full heartedly. So I will make sure that there's a link in the podcast notes to go vote for him. And if you follow me on Instagram, you could also, you know, vote there. So
I can't believe you brought that up. That's great. You know what? I'm also going to bring one last thing up.
Yeah, go for
it. If you have TikTok, find me at Nicole Pometti, P-O-M as in Mary, E-T-T-I. I have a little series that I do every Monday and Thursday. I release 1 minute videos called You Should Watch This, where I talk about films that you should watch. And they're typically older and forgotten films that, you know, you either knew or never knew about. And I tell you why you should watch them. So it's a outlet for me and my film geekiness, if you enjoy that aspect of the show. It's also on Instagram, but it's really thriving over on TikTok.
Yeah, you've gone viral, you know, sometimes,
right? Is the future.
Right?
Yes, I have.
How exciting.
So, yeah, really exciting. So, you know, just a couple of things that we want to throw out there to promote ourselves. But do give Nico a vote. He's such a cute dog, and it's like, his name is my mother's favorite thing at this moment. She even brought it up this morning how much she enjoys that name.
Yeah, so, if you don't know, now you know. It's Nico Puggington the Third. That is his full name. He also has an Instagram, guys. Nico, N-I-K-O, Puggington, P-U-G-G-I-N-G-T-O-N. That's it. That's his Instagram handle.
Yeah, you did it, yeah.
Yeah.
And you know what? To get it out of the way, guys, we love hearing from you. And if you go to our website, one of the best things that you could do is reach out to us. RemakesReboots Revivals@gmail.com is our email. You can find us on Instagram at RemakesReboots Revivals. On our website, where it has the links to everywhere. We're on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify. If you go to any of those platforms and you can rate or follow us or subscribe to us, we would really appreciate it if you could do that. That helps our followers grow.
Yep.
Oh, and of course, one of our favorite aspects is that you can now phone in and have your voice be heard and maybe even have it played on a future episode of this podcast. Mm-hmm. So call into our number and let us know your thoughts at
862-248-2326. That's 862-248-2326. Again, you'll find that phone number on our website too, www.remakesrebootsrevivals.com.
Awesome. And now that we've gotten all the housekeeping out at the beginning of the show, let's get into the meat of it. Like we said, we're talking about The Wonder Years, an ABC show that ran from March 15th, 1988 till May 12th, 1993. So this was like, I was born in 1988. This show came out the year I was born, and I love watching things from the year I was born. I don't know if you feel that way. It just makes me feel like, oh my gosh, this is so crazy. Like, this was made when I was being made.
That's
you put it like that.
That is one way of looking at it for sure. Yes.
But sometimes it also makes me feel old because I'm like, oh yeah, Fred Savage, I know him. And oh my God, how old is he now? You know, how old am I? Like, this is that old, like, you know, crazy.
He's actually,
sometimes I don't like to think about it.
But he's aged well, I think.
He has aged well. Yes.
Like fine wine. It doesn't happen to all men, but
yes. So the series stars, like we said, Fred Savage. And Fred Savage plays a kid named Kevin Arnold. And it pretty much is narrated by the older version of himself. Very much like A Christmas Story, you know, where an older narrator is looking back on their childhood. So this is this entire show, right?
Right.
Older Kevin talks about growing up in a suburban middle class family in the late 60s into the early 70s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's even kind of like How I Met Your Mother, where maybe he's like describing it to, you know, the next generation in his life. Or maybe, you know, he's not talking to anybody. It's just he's just a narrator.
Well, he's I mean, I don't think it's weird. He's not talking to anybody. It's not like How I Met Your Mother where he's talking to his kids. Because at the end, the series finale, spoiler alert, guys, after he wraps up the story, the thing that you hear when the title card goes to black is just like the kid saying, it's like, do you want to play ball, dad? Coming, kid. It was just like, what a, I don't know, I thought it was a whack ending in my opinion, but that's just,
well, then it was also like, who are you talking to?
Right, this whole time
not talking to your child,
just looking at himself in the mirror telling himself the story,
maybe, or into a tape recorder for his memoirs or
maybe.
Something.
Oh, you know what, that's a good point. Maybe
could be that, you know.
I can't imagine also, that Kevin Arnold live a fantastic life that deserves a memoir, in my opinion.
Hey man, people write memoirs. Well, you know what, hey, it was a TV show for 6 years, so obviously there was some form of engagement that we had with this man's pretty ordinary life.
That's fair. All right, you got me
if
there.
You yeah, I mean, like, you know, do you think, actually, do you agree that his life would be labeled as ordinary?
It wasn't extraordinary.
Yeah, it wasn't, right? And that's what worked so well about this was, you know, kind of like there's beauty in just kind of like, you know, a typical American experience.
Atypical American.
Atypical. Not yeah. the.
Right.
A.
It's atypical. Typical.
Yes. Not I'm sorry. Did I say either. The or?
I don't know. I just want to just True. Emphasize okay. the A.
Yeah. And not atypical. It's A space typical.
Yes. Right.
Just to be clear.
No. I think that's fair. I think because, you know, atypical could be very confusing.
No, absolutely. But yeah, so the show begins off when he's 12 and it goes well into when he's 17 and graduating high school. So, you know, that's the wonder years, you know, like pretty much puberty into about to enter into adulthood, even though when you're 17, you're like nowhere near a full functioning adult.
Yeah, but in your opinion. Head, you feel like you are.
Yeah, I mean, well, mm-hmm. technically, you know, you can vote and you'll be tried. As well, 18, and you'll be tried as an adult for your crimes.
That's not true anymore. Now you can be tried as an adult at like 14.
Yeah, Jesus. That's terrible.
You can serve in the military at 18.
Yeah, so there you could go. Die for your country, but right. you can't buy alcohol.
Which is an important point of the pilot, actually.
Of the pilot? Oh, yeah. Yes. That's yes, right, yeah. Yes.
His next door neighbor, or across the street neighbor, Winnie, who he has an on-again, off-again relationship with, her brother dies in the pilot during the Vietnam War.
Wow, just going right into it.
I'm going right into it a little bit because... And Winnie is played by Danica Patrick. I think that's her name, right?
It's not Danica McKellar.
Oh, you're right. Danica Patrick is the race car driver. Danica
yes.
McKellar.
Yes. I made that mistake recently, too. That's why I'm like, wait a minute. I don't think it's Danica Patrick.
Thank you for correcting me, as usual, Nicole.
But yeah, Danica McKellar plays her, yeah. Well, before we get into that, too, you know, the important thing is to know is that Kevin, it's about Kevin, but it's about his home life, and then it's about his friend life and school life, right? So it's like those three important aspects. And Kevin, he has a father, Jack, his mother, Norma, his brother, Wayne, and his sister, Karen. And he's the youngest.
Yeah.
Then he has a best friend, Paul, and another very good friend, Gwendolyn, who they call Winnie,
mm-hmm.
whom he has a crush on, pretty right. much. Yeah. And he's, like, always liked him ever since he was younger than when we first are introduced in the show, which is when he's 12 years old. So it's very much like a first love
is
story
that
we get throughout the show.
That he liked her always? I thought it was...
Well, I think intimated it, right? When Wayne was mocking them at the lunch table.
Yeah, but I thought that was just what brothers do to siblings.
Well, yeah, but, you know.
Because...
If he's good at what he does, it's based on some form of...
Because I don't think I actually don't think he got a crush on her until, like, she glowed up in that pilot episode, right? Because before that, she was, like, kind of... I don't know. She had those pigtails and, like, those... awkward looking clothes. She's tomboyish, right?
And yes, I agree.
When he sees her all dolled up and she's just like, I want to be known as Gwendolyn. And then no one respected her wishes.
Yeah, seriously. You know? Seriously. Well, in defense of this moment, the only thing I will say about that is that maybe he didn't realize how he felt until she, you know, glowed up and it was like, oh, right. Yeah, I like her. You know, I vibe with this girl. Blah, okay. blah, blah.
Fair.
So, anyway. But yeah, so, you know, the show's very much focuses on his dynamics, especially with, like, his older brother's a bully. You know, his sister's very much a product of the 60s and is very much the nonconformist in the family. His two parents and then his friendships and predominantly his relationship with Winnie. And circling back to what Rolando said, the big thing that is planted in the pilot episode that goes on to really define Winnie as a character is that her older brother dies in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, was something that happened. That was very common in 1968.
Yeah. And that's what happens when America gets in endless wars, right?
Yeah. So people get drafted and all that stuff. So, and you know, the way they shot it too, you pretty much knew he was gonna die.
I mean,
the way they shot him, I was like, yeah, we're never gonna really know this guy.
Oh, okay. I have to say, just like, well, I don't think we saw him get shot, but okay.
Yeah, the way we shot him.
We saw the picture frame, you mean? Yeah, it was just like, he's never coming back.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And the thing is that when you're younger and you're kind of watching shows about kids, you know, you kind of look at it as kind of a mirror reflection or a relatability factor. So when you're older, there's things that you didn't recognize before, you didn't see before, or you see in a different light. And for me, revisiting the show after not seeing it for a long time was I didn't realize how dramatic it was in tone. I guess I always somewhat processed it as somewhat of a light comedy, which in times it is, but every episode I watched was just like straight up drama.
It was like a dramedy.
I guess dramedy.
Before
but like
the
some
term,
of the I guess the episodes that I watched also were more so like the emotional episodes.
So which episodes did you revisit?
So the big one that I actually want to talk about is in season three, they put on a stage production of Our Town.
Okay. You would want to talk about this one.
Well, I was in the school. I was stage manager. And when I was in high school. So, you know, I could relate to that.
Okay.
But Our Town by Thornton Wilder is a play about death. And it was just, it's an interesting play for Winnie to be a part of because she wanted, you know, she very much wanted to be in that role. And Kevin was like, no, theater's for geeks and all this stuff. Because she gets to address all these unspoken emotions within her own life about her brother. Mm-hmm. And at that point in her life, Winnie's parents, because of the grief that they, you know, had losing their son, they separated.
Right.
And the father moved to Chicago. So it's just like, oh, the dynamics here should be really interesting. And it was like really sweet. And it actually made me like shed a tear.
Aww.
And it was because of this like performance that she played that her parents actually ended up getting together and all this stuff. So it's like a super emotional episode.
Oh wait, the
and
parents
I'm
got
like,
back together?
Yeah, it was like that brought them back together. He came, he watched her performance. They were like crying and holding hands the whole time. And it was just kind of like this really cathartic healing moment for like that whole family, you know, watching her in this role. Because she plays the main role of the girl who's, you know, revisiting the memories of her life after she's passed. You know, it's like heavy shit.
Is that what Our Town is about?
You never read Our Town?
No. I thought I assumed for some reason, I assumed it was like a Western and then like some girl coming back to Our Town.
Okay, you're somewhere. I mean,
is it a Western?
Middle, it's not a Western, but it's like old America, middle America and stuff. But
I don't know why I assume every musical is a Western. And
it's not a musical.
It's not a musical?
It's a play, but it's not a musical.
See, I thought it was a musical. That's my sense. When you said it just like Our Town, I'm just like, oh, of course you would pick a musical episode. That's so, okay, there you go. My
I
own
picked a theater episode, but not a musical episode. Here. Well, I mean, it's a show that was written in 1938, but it was about like people in the early 1900s. So I think that's why you thought it was a Western. But yeah. So that's the third part, though, of the play. Like the whole thing's like it's three parts. It's daily life, love and marriage, and then death and eternity. And the death and eternity part is just like, oh, Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. It's heavy. And it's very like it's like a meta play. Because, like, the narrator of the play who guides you through all these acts is, like, the stage manager, you know? And it's, like, a very, like, minimalist.
Oh.
It's a really good play.
It's an actual stage manager.
Yeah, but he's an actor playing a stage manager.
Wait, so when you said you were a stage manager, you meant that you were a character in the play. I thought you were the stage manager behind the scenes. This is way too confusing.
I know. I am confusing you now. I'm so sorry. Let's just move past all of this. I thought it was a really nice cathartic episode and it made me shed some tears and I was like, oh wow, this is pretty profound stuff for, you know, what I kind of just dismissed in my head is like some show about like, you know, two kids falling in love and like high school sweethearts and all this stuff.
Right.
And that there was like actually trying to get to the, like to know these people on a deeper level and to, you know, to really like bring out what they were experiencing internally, not just externally, you know, and not just like silly stuff and like tangible nonsense that people deal with in that age. Like this is like heavy shit. So, I mean, of course, the show goes on with, you know, like, oh, they get crushes and they break up and, you know,
break up many
all this
times.
Stuff. But there's even an episode, like I think it's the third episode of the show. you know, when he doesn't know what his father does. All he knows, Kevin, all he knows is that his father always comes home cranky. In a bad mood.
Yeah.
And but he actually goes with his father to his job and he like sees what he has to deal with. And he sees how unhappy he is with the lot he's kind of been given in life, but that he does it for his family. And like, it, you know, this 12-year-old kid witnesses this and he comes to understand his father more and appreciate his father more and where he's coming from.
Right.
And that was also an interesting episode. Just like I wasn't expecting the show to go there in these moments, you know, and it was interesting because I was drawn more to watching those episodes than like the Winnie and Kevin episodes, because, you know, I know where this goes. I know all about them and I wasn't really interested in revisiting those. Did you what about you? What episodes did you watch?
I mean, I rewatched Winnie and Kevin episodes. Not because I was interested in their drama, just because. So you remember when we were talking about Cory and Topanga when we did Boy Meets World and what like how what a bad example they are for like I think people in general, because it's like high school sweethearts seems so, they make it seem so sacred. So like it's just like, oh my god, the, you know, relationship goals. And I don't think they are, because of just like you know.
Oh, and let's go to Epcot together and college together. And
well, they didn't go to Epcot. He stalked her to Epcot, but yes.
Oh, that's even worse.
Yeah, it is worse. But no. So, however, in this one, the reason I was revisiting them was because, like, you know, I think the other TV high school sweetheart couple that, if you don't think of Cory and Topanga, I think you think of Winnie and Kevin. I think their relationship is obviously a lot more realistic, because like I was making jokes, just like they, you know, I can't tell when they're together, when they're not. But isn't that like how most likely like real high school couples are?
Absolutely.
When they have such a history together. Yeah. And I think that's I that's why I was like checking out these episodes to see like their ups, their ebbs and their flows. And, you know, one of the episodes, though, that I revisited, though, was the episode from season one called The Call, in which these are the kind of episodes that really spoke to me when I was watching this show as a kid. I didn't watch it on Nick at Night, by the way. I used to watch it on Channel 11 in New York, in the Bronx, because that's where they would get it. And weirdly enough, like, I actually, it would just be on to pass the time for me. My grandma, for some reason, loved this show. She loved the kids. She thought they were so adorable. She had no idea what they were talking about, because she doesn't understand English, but like, she just liked, there was something about the show that just kept her calm. Me, I thought it was the most boring thing growing up and stuff. But I but I distinctly remember so much of the show, though. But one of the episodes I do remember, though, is The Call. And that's because in this episode, Kevin is trying to call, like, this girl that he's kind of been talking to at school that he has a crush on. Not Winnie. It's some other girl. And this is all happening while America is about to land on the moon. Right. So you have all these people being so excited. It's just like, oh, my God, this is like such a big, tremendous moment. But Kevin doesn't care. He's in his head about this one moment, about the call that he has to make, to, you know, to the opposite sex. And yeah. For me, that's kind of, in retrospect, what a cute episode this is, because it's just like, wow, like, talk about growing up. Like, this is it. Like, the world is spinning. But, like, you're in your head. You're only thinking about yourself right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, it made me think of just, like, these poor kids right now in the pandemic. The world is spinning. But, like, they're still probably in their own, like, little dramas, whatever they may be, on their phones and in their social lives. You know what I mean? So,
absolutely.
I don't know. Maybe there's some solace there knowing, like, you know, the world heals. The world finds a way. You know, kids will always still be kids. And yeah. So that's one of the episodes that I saw. There wasn't a Winnie episode. What was the other Winnie episode that I did see? The one where Winnie moves, right? So Winnie is moving from across the street. She's going to move. She stays in the same town, but she's not going to be going to the same school anymore as Kevin. And, you know, they don't have cars and stuff. So they're basically, it's almost like a breakup that they're experiencing. Of course, Kevin, I don't know, kind of being stunted child. He doesn't really know what to say to Winnie, so just pisses her off some more. So they kind of leave without really saying goodbye. And I was just kind of mad at Kevin. I'm just like, my God, the savages, they just annoy me.
Yeah.
You know, him and Ben.
Well, it's also nice and realistic, because it's like, well, you know, of course, looking back in your 13-year-old self, a 13-year-old's not going to know how to handle a situation.
That's true. I mean, yeah.
And I appreciate that.
You know, it's just like, no one's going to give, like, this, you know, this profound speech goodbye. he said, it's like, well, I'll see you around. She just rolls her eyes and just like leaves.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I'm sure he does that more often than not. In the Our Town episode, like, he was like, she was so nervous about the play and how much it meant to her, especially when she was finding out that her father was coming. He was like, whatever, you could just like quit. It's not a big deal. It's only a reason to get out of seventh period anyway. And she's like, that's the most insensitive thing I've ever heard, and just runs away from him.
Kevin was such a catch, let me fucking tell you. I do want to talk a little bit about Kevin. How adorable was he in season one, though? He was the cutest thing.
Very cute kid.
I just jumped eventually to like the series finale, and I was just like, wow, he turned so awkward. So it was, those were rough years for growing up. But hey, I'm not judging because we've all been there. I'm just saying he went from being cute as a button and to those awkward teenage years. I assume that's why the show got canceled, right? It's just like, no one wants to see this.
Well, you know, that's funny enough you said that, because when the show was in reruns, anytime it was the older episodes, I didn't like watching those. I only liked watching the earlier ones. And I think I just responded more to them younger. Like, once they got to look more...
Like, older,
but like, I don't know. It's weird. It's like... Older in high school, Kevin looks more like awkward and pubescent.
Yeah, no, and he also has an annoying voice.
Yeah, his voice changes.
It's kind of grating, and I'm just like, my God, this is why Winnie doesn't want anything to do with you, Kevin.
Yeah,
leave her alone. Yeah.
But you know, overall, I actually really enjoyed it, because watching the show too, I was like, oh, this is you know, it's heartwarming. It's actually like. Dealing with silly stuff, you know, like, oh, hey, like, it's realistic to me that a kid wouldn't give a shit about the moon landing because he's too busy trying to call a girl.
Right.
But then, like, you know, the Outtown episode and how much it meant for her to be in the show and, like, to hopefully bring her parents and heal her parents. You know, it's, like, got, like, these, it's riddled with, like, real things, like, relatable things. And the way that the show also ended to me too was just, I appreciated it so much because it was also like, this is just how life works. You know, it's not a fairy tale. Mm-hmm. It's nothing spectacular. It's pretty ordinary. And I say that not in a bad way. And, you know, at the end of the show, everyone was like, oh my God, Winnie and Kevin forever. But it turns out that they weren't.
They weren't. And they lost their virginity. He was just looking back at his,
they lost their virginity and they were first love, but you know, thank God they didn't get married, and they went on and they experienced other things, and they went on and, you know, lived the rest of their lives, but they still appreciated each other and the roles that they had for each other.
Right.
And that I thought was like the best part too. I'm like, oh, that's so realistic too, because life goes on, things end, new chapters end, and old chapters end, new chapters begin.
I will say I did tear up a little bit at the series finale, because the kiss, when they lose their virginity, the kiss, the shot it ends on their kiss is the same shot that the pilot ended on, right? Like the camera pulling away and the two of them just like making out grossly on the bottom half of the screen. But I teared up because I'm, oh my God, this is so beautiful. These two kids, like these ups and downs that they've had, and they're about to just do it, you know? And then of course, like after that climax, right, when the audience is just like, yeah, they're finally gonna, they're together, this is it, like they're gonna be together forever, the narrator comes in and is just like, nope, we did not end up together, like she went off to Paris and 8 years later I met up with her again with my kid and my wife, and it's just like, oh
yeah,
what a bummer.
Absolutely.
I hated Wayne, by the way. I just wanted to say that.
Oh no, yeah, so obnoxious.
Wayne was the fucking worst.
I liked the sister.
And I remember the other note I had here for the podcast, for this episode.
Uh-huh.
If we hadn't revisited this and you had to ask me what the show Wonder Years is about, I could have swore to you that the father was abusive and used to beat the shit out of him because he has like that cold energy. And then rewatching the show, I'm just like, oh, I guess I made that up in my head. Like, I just...
Well, I mean, he was kind of emotionally unavailable and a really, like, stern, cold father. So,
yeah,
it wasn't that far of a jump for you, I guess, in your head.
I guess I was just, like, imagining that, like, there were some hardcore beatings and stuff. No, that was all... That was just in my... That was, what's that? Fanon in my head. You know?
Why would you even imagine that?
I don't know. I could have... That's the thing. I'm not saying that I saw it. I'm just saying, like, if you asked me, like, what was going on in the Wonder Years, I would have told you. It's just like, oh, yeah, like, Kevin was being abused by his father. obviously. Yeah.
That would have been a little too dark, I think, for ABC in the early 90s.
Oh, I would agree. But what a great performance from Dan Lauria, right? Like, he's so good in that role. It's just like, I don't know. I don't think I could picture anyone else.
Although I didn't see many episodes, and correct me if I'm wrong, any Wonder Years, Die Hards, but how often did they shed enough light on who the mother was? I know later on she wants to enter the workforce.
I think she,
and you know,
I think she completes college.
I think she does. Yeah. So, yeah. But I guess, you know, I didn't get to experience too many episodes that really shed more of a light on her story.
Right.
You know, because pretty early in those, and even in the pilot, like the daughter's relationship with her, like the mom kind of seemed kind of emotionally neglected.
Yeah.
Or at least dismissed by her parents, you know, as unfortunately some mother's roles get reduced to in those years.
Yeah, it's true.
So I wonder if the show focused on that or not. I don't know. I didn't get to rewatch the whole entire show, so I wouldn't know.
Well, I had forgotten that Kevin had a sister, to be honest.
Yeah, because then she moves out and then...
Is that what happens to her? Married. I don't remember that well.
I know, and then she gets like married, I think, and has a baby towards the end.
She has a baby in the series finale, yeah. She's pregnant in the series finale.
There you go. So something like that, yeah.
Something like that.
Wayne's more of the memorable.
Oh, Wayne, because like he was... What a douche.
Yeah, he was a douche, yeah.
and the last thing I want to bring up is Paul Pfeiffer, the nerd, the best friend. You know, it's an urban legend. I just want to clear it up here on the podcast.
Yes.
Uh-huh. But everyone thinks that like Paul Pfeiffer inspired Milhouse, and I googled it myself because I was just like, as I was watching the pilot, I'm just like, was Paul Pfeiffer the influence for this guy Milhouse from The Simpsons? Turns out the answer is no. They came out the same year, so it'd be impossible for that to have happened. Also, but
I didn't. I thought you were gonna say the other urban legend.
Oh, what's the other urban legend?
That Marilyn Manson played the role of Paul.
Oh, you know what? You're right. That came up in my searches. I thought that seemed ridiculous, though.
Oh, yeah. But growing up, like, everyone was saying that, which is such a weird thing to think about. Like, I can't believe there was, like, a 9 or 10-year-old version of me being like, yeah, Marilyn Manson was Paul in Wonder Years. Like, it's just so, it's so random.
That's hilarious. That's so funny.
But I want to know, like, who thought to start that rumor, because...
Some cool person.
So far.
I bet you it was a guy who played Paul Pfeiffer. He's just like,
maybe.
I'll start to do it myself.
And bring some notoriety to me.
Yeah.
Yet, what's his name? I'm sorry. That's rude. What is his name?
That's how I describe people. But
Josh Saviano.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway. but I feel like The Wonder Years is definitely one of the most well-known, you know, classic American television shows.
Because of its opening credits.
Yes. Thank you, actually. Very well done opening credits. You know, it's like you're watching home movies done to the Joe Cocker cover of the Beatles song With a Little Help from My Friends.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole style of the show was different, you know, when it came out. There weren't shows that were narrated like this, especially by a person's older self.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you approach the show differently. It's like a memory, and it was geared too for, in the early 90s, people who grew up in that era. So like people in their 20s, early 30s,
yeah,
you know, who were watching TV. This is who it was gained, like, you know, relate to them.
I was gonna say, it's just like, this is, I mean, this must have been like just nostalgia porn for some of these people who watched the show. Because mm-hmm. I mean, the show was loved. Like, it was loved. I mean, Fred Savage, he's the youngest nominee for Best Actor for an Emmy.
Yes.
You know? Mm-hmm. So,
and this was one of the top 30 shows, Nielsen top 30 shows in the first four seasons.
Wow. See, there you go. I mean, the show was rocking it.
Yeah. It's on a bunch of different greatest shows of all time lists and all that stuff. But there's so many of those that, like, who takes that to heart? So.
I do. I think the TV Guide lists to heart.
The TV Guide list.
The TV Guide list for greatest series finales of all time. This one ranked number 11.
Oh, did it?
Mm-hmm.
What did they rank number one?
I don't know. I just know that this one was ranked number 11. I'm going to guess MASH, maybe?
Oh.
People do love the MASH ending, and I don't know. I think it's a little, not macabre, but a little dark. He's just like, he's leaving the war finally. Like, there's still people there.
Isn't that actually a good
thing? They're all waiting. No, because, like, it's just like the war isn't over, though. You know what I mean? This poor doctor has been here however many years.
For 10 seasons.
You know? So.
Yeah, what a perfect commentary on Vietnam, eh?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, well, TV Guide also named it one of the best 20 shows of the 80s, so there's that.
Wait, do they mean... Oh, I guess they must mean of that came out in the 80s. Because I don't know, yeah. I associate this one more so with the 90s. 88, like...
Well, yeah, but that's because we grew up watching
that's also true. I grew up watching it in the 90s.
Yeah.
All right.
But yeah, also, did you know that the voice actor was Daniel Stern, who is one of the...
directors?
The bandits, and one of the bandits in Home Alone. He's not... Joe Pesci, obviously, he's the other guy. That's the narrator as older Kevin.
Oh, really? Oh, I did not. I didn't know that. I just knew that he directed some of the episodes of The Wonder Years.
Oh, yeah. That's good for him then. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so Wonder Years, everybody knows it, classic American television show. So naturally, it was going to get picked up and revived. Now, I said in the intro that it was a reboot. Is this a reboot or is this a remake?
I think it's a remake. I don't think it's a reboot.
I think it's a reboot, because a remake would intimate that they would take it as it was and just do it again, so there would be a Kevin. But they're taking the premise and they're starting it from, you know, they're kind of just they're rebooting the franchise as a brand new thing, right? Kind of like the Ghostbusters female version was a reboot because those guys weren't in it. It was them, but it was Ghostbusters. You know what I mean?
Right. No, I agree. You're right.
So that's why I would say reboot. But yeah, so 2021, here we are. ABC, desperate for contact.
Content.
for content, I'm sorry. Desperate for content.
I was like,
I just saw Mystery Science Theater live on Sunday. Uh-huh. And the film that they watched was Making Contact, and it's just been in my head.
Oh,
so I keep saying contact when I shouldn't. Desperate for content. They have revived their property of the Wonder Years. And it's interesting because they decided that the way they were going to do it was not tell Kevin's story again. They were going to tell a completely different person's story in a completely different part of America. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. The original Wonder Years, they never really said where it was. You know, could be California, could like, be New York. Uh-huh. Do we know? We don't know. But we do know.
Wait, it was not New York.
Well, that's the thing. We don't know.
I think it was like more like middle America. I assumed it was like Wisconsin or something. Like a rust belt state.
Well, they never say so.
Okay, fine. Well, I'm glad that they never said because I didn't know. I just made assumptions.
Yeah, and that was like also, I guess, something that was popular in the late 80s because The Simpsons, they never say where they're from either. It's just Springfield.
Okay.
So I guess these trends happen. Anywho, but this one takes place in Montgomery, Alabama, and it starts off in the same exact year as Kevin Arnold's story in 1968. So we're getting the same kind of stylization, an older narrator looking back at his life and as a young boy, and 12-year-old boy with his family and his friends and his love life in school in 1968. So that's why they brand it as The Wonder Years. But do not be fooled. It's a very different show.
It is.
Other than that.
Why would you say it's very different?
Because it's a brand new story where it's brand new characters.
Oh.
It's pretty much a brand new show.
I mean,
this one follows Dean Williams, 12-year-old boy. He has a father, Bill Williams, played by
Dulé Hill.
Yes.
Who is aging too, like a fine wine. And
yeah, he looked great. I was like, damn.
I am so glad that he's out of the psych. No, I mean, I liked him in Psych, but I'm so glad that he's getting, like, front and center his own time.
Yes. It was nice to see him again, too. I was like, oh, hey. His mother, Lillian, his sister, Kim, and he has a couple of friends, Corey and Brad, and his Winnie Cooper, Keesa Clemons.
Mm.
And this time it's narrated by Don Cheadle. So we got a big star narrating as older Dean.
This is like I said, Disney synergy, you know?
Yes. Yes. So yeah, you know, older Dean's looking back nostalgically at his life, being, you know, a middle class resident of Montgomery, Alabama in 1968. And the show is with a predominantly, it's a black family, but the cast itself too is predominantly black. So whereas The Wonder Years covers a middle American and pretty much everyone there is fucking white, you know, this is, well, here's another story happening at the same exact time.
Right. In this part of America.
Yes.
And it kicks off right at the assassination of Martin Luther King.
Yes, that happens in the pilot.
Yes.
While we're learning about the characters and their dynamics, like his father is a music composer.
Mm-hmm.
Other stuff that I forgot about.
Dean's sister Kim, for example, she is flirting with the idea of the Black Panther movement, for example, right? Where yes. His dad, his mom seem to be much more pacifist and obviously leaning more towards Dr. King's, you know, teachings of like how to, you know, racial tensions in America, like how to handle those, right? But they're handling it in different ways, though, for example, right? So we know the Dean's dad, Bill, he actually wants to kind of himself segregate also from the white community, right? Like they have like this, that's his point of view. I think his mom is kind of a little bit more on the, you know, it's just like, you know, we're allowed to like, we can cohabitate and stuff. We're seeing this play out in real time. And it's an interesting choice to go back to the 60s, this part. I think it was more interesting to go back this far in time. They made the joke right off the bat that, like, you know, racial tensions are high. There's a disease running rampant and stuff. You would think it's just like, oh, yeah, 2021. But it's just like, nah, we're going 1968 where so much has changed. Interesting choice to go that far back, I think.
Yeah, I actually, when I heard that this was going to happen, I just assumed that they would be like, okay, updating it for like the 90s, you know, because mm-hmm. that was pretty much the age difference for the original narrator. He grew up in the 60s, but he's telling us the story in the 90s. So, you know, it was only like 20 years later tops. But we're getting a story from a narrator who's looking back on like 40, 50 years ago. Which to me is also was interesting too, because I'm like, oh, this is, you know, a much different time. Are there no other eras that are worth looking back on and telling us the story of? Like, why are we still going back to the 60s? I think the reason that they did that obviously is because they wanted to almost have a conversation with the original Wonder Years. You know, they wanted to be like, here's the story of the white POV, and now here's the black POV of the same era.
Mm-hmm.
And there's such a dynamic time. I mean, you know, who wants to watch a show that takes place in the 80s? Because the 80s was terrible. But sorry for anyone who grew up in the 80s and really loved being in the 80s. But, you know, when you look at all the shit that happened in the 80s, it was not a great time for our culture and our society.
Wait, why?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, Reagan economics taken over and really putting the class divide in this country.
I would love to see
the
that.
AIDS epidemic.
I also would love to see that.
Crack epidemic.
Yeah. Oh, there's a TV show about the crack epidemic, though.
I think that, you know, Wall Street and really making people feel like they had to, you know, greed is good lifestyle was putting the class divide even bigger in this country. I mean, watching Pose too, and the way that
I mean, this is all sounding so like the makings for a fabulous TV show that could have easily been the one.
Maybe. Well, I mean, I guess the things that were happening in the 60s or 70s were good for our culture, whereas the things that were happening in the 80s were not good for our culture.
Right, fine.
Let's
that's
say that.
Good. All right. That's fine.
I mean, not everything that happened in the 60s was good for our culture. Don't come at me and don't be like, oh,
yeah,
no, I'm not saying, hey, the 60s was a great time. A lot of bad stuff happened, and some good happened in the 80s too. But comparatively speaking, I guess that's why they chose it. Again, I think they did it more so to have a conversation with the original Wonder Years, especially since there are people who are involved from the original in this one. I don't know if you know, but
Fred
the
Savage?
Person... Fred Savage is an executive producer and directed the first three episodes of
Wonder
Years.
Oh, did he? That I didn't know, that he directed the first three episodes. Okay, fine.
Yeah.
Good for you, Fred.
Yeah. Writers are pretty different. And, you know, that's good, too, because we need a new perspective. But, you know, it didn't completely ignore the people who came before.
Well, apparently Lee Daniels is the one who came up with the idea of having a black family from the 60s.
Oh.
Yeah. He's another one of the EPs. So there you go. That fact did not interest you at all, Nicole.
Fact,
I guess
no.
at all.
Hey, it's just like idea conceived by Lee Daniels.
Well, he's one of the writers. He's one of the producers also for this show. It's like this is just as much his show as it is Fred Savage. Everyone is talking about Fred Savage and his involvement on the show, but like it's just like, all right, but I mean Fred Savage is just, we're only talking about him because he's the one from the original. He's giving the show, I think, a little more clout than it deserves, but whatever.
Well, I mean,
no beef to Kevin. It's a Fred Savage.
I don't see his name as a writer on any of these, but Fred Savage did direct it. So I guess that's more of like a actual role that's being played, because we all know executive producers is your name's on it.
No, not TV. Executive producers are like main showrunners and stuff usually.
They just get to say yes or no.
A lot of times. Yeah. Or they have a lot more creative control over the overall season. It's not so. Yeah, you're thinking executive producers for movies. That is like, that's just like a title. You financed it. Not so much in television. In television, titles mean a little. Yeah, there's a different hierarchy.
Oh, okay, interesting. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the show actually though is given the created title to a writer called Saladin K. Patterson. So the original Wonder Years was created by Neil Marlins and Carol Black, but they're not credited with this one.
Interesting.
I actually think is also interesting too, because then it's like, well, why call it the Wonder Years? Or maybe you could still call it the Wonder Years and it doesn't have to be trademarked to Neil Maldon's and Carol Black. I guess we should talk a little bit about our thoughts on the show before I raise the question of why call it the Wonder Years. There are some similarities with telling Dean Williams' story. He also, like I said, he has a Winnie Cooper, Keisa Clemons, who he absolutely... I mean, when we first see her, she's introduced as his crush, whereas she wasn't introduced, Winnie was not introduced as Kevin's crush.
Right.
But nonetheless, you know, this whole like childhood first love story is very much has been planted and is going to be playing out throughout these other episodes. They removed a sibling and they gave him an older sister. So the bullying aspect is gone. But the dynamics of him with his older sibling, you know, is a very much an important part of the show.
One older sibling that's present. The other one is in Vietnam.
Yes.
The oldest brother is in Vietnam, which I was afraid that, like, the pilot episode was going to be like, oh, no.
Yeah.
He's going to go through the death in the family. But I'm assuming my assumption is setup is for later this season, there will be a tragedy in that family. Because you don't have an unseen child in Vietnam unless they're gonna die. I just feel like
isn't that like a rule
of writing in television, right? Like it's just like, you don't show the gun in the first act if you're not gonna pull the trigger.
Yeah, even though it's like, I mean, it would make me more sad if I actually met him before he died, but I guess, you know, it's just, you know, hearing about a death is sad too, so.
It's a man's brother. Jesus, Nicole, you're so cold.
We never meet him. Who knows? That's true. Just say he's real.
That's right.
But it's interesting, too, because in approach, the show is just, it doesn't really even feel like the Wonder Years to me, other than the narration by Don Cheadle. But, you know, narration wasn't unique to the Wonder Years, the original, like, you know, it just felt like narration. The show just moves so much like a 2021 show. You know, we go back and forth in time. Like when we first meet his father, it's like, oh, that was dad's thing. Always be cool. And then we see all these different scenarios where he's like, be cool. Oh, there's a fire starting in a barbecue. It's okay. Be cool. Oh, you know, whatever. Oh, the cops are pulling us over. Be cool. Right. So like, this is just so, these are things that we see so often now in television. So this is just now how people tell stories, but they didn't do that in the original Wonder Years, and I think that actually worked in my enjoyment of it because it was just like a simple, you know, just have the narrator bring us from scene to scene and not do this whole crazy, like, almost like cartoonish way of, like, jumping back. Because, like, cartoons do that. Like, The Simpsons, the Family Guy. Yeah, callbacks. And now all of these, you know, live-action shows are doing it, and it's just kind of fucking annoying.
Don't, because 30 Rock was the king of doing the callback.
That's great. In a comedy, that makes sense. But like for me, I guess the Wonder Years, I was anticipating more of a straightforward story, and it just started playing like all these other shows. And
which is interesting because
it is somewhat more comedic in tone.
I was going to say, it's just like you mentioned that like you, in retrospect, didn't realize how the Wonder Years was not so much of a comedy as much of a drama.
Yeah.
Right. And here, we're seeing that this is, they're leaning, they're steering much more towards comedy, right? They're trying to be a lot more lighthearted than I think the original.
Which I think is interesting too, because I would have liked to have, I mean, you know, the experience of a black family in the 60s was probably most likely way heavier than a white family's experience in the late 60s. So I guess the best way to tackle it is to make it more lighthearted. So it's not as heavy as intense. So I guess in general, though, I it's interesting that they're taking it to the more comedic way, because I was expecting more of the Wonder Years style of just like the straightforward storytelling and more of the dramedy aspect of it. And it just is kind of coming off like every other 2021 show. And it's also a very, I don't want to say millennial, but of its time, tone and content wise, the way that they're forming the like episode, which is fine. You know, they're making it in 2021. So do it like every other 2021 show. But the Wonder Years is kind of like timeless in the way that they were just simply telling the story.
Can you elaborate on that? I want to know what you mean.
So the way that they're formatting the show, the stylization of it, the callbacks,
yes.
The use of music and I guess the delivery of jokes. Uh-huh. It just feels so contemporary. And one of the things I said about the original, The Wonder Years, is that I didn't even know that it wasn't from the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess in my perception, when I was a kid watching it, and even now, I didn't really feel like there was anything that, oh, this is so 80s.
Right.
Because they were just telling the story.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't seem like they were caught up in, like, you know, 80s cliches of making a television show. Like, some of these old shows are. Like, you watch them, you're like, oh, my God, this is so 80s, or this is so early 90s, or whatever. So I was expecting that this Wonder Years would just give a more timeless approach to telling a story, which is just simply telling a story, not getting too caught up in your stylization or like contemporary ways of telling a joke or structuring a scene. Does that make sense?
No, I follow you now. Okay. I agree with you in this sense, right? And so I, as I usually do, watch these in reverse order. So I had the luck of not really remembering what the Wonder Years, the original one, was like. Right.
Mm-hmm.
When I was watching this, as far as I remembered, it felt like the Wonder Years. Like, okay, yeah. So they're doing the Wonder Years thing. Like, there's my Kevin. All right. So we don't have a Wayne, but up there's Winnie. So that kind of stuff. And then I go and rewatch Wonder Years. I'm just like, oh, this is a lot more slower paced than I remember it being. It's almost, dare I say, boring. But no. But I, as a kid, used to also think that the original one, when I was watching it, was boring.
Okay.
Right? So, you know, for me, I tend to gravitate more towards, like, that kind of, like, faster comedy aspect. Like, I guess I always have. So it doesn't bother me. But it is a very stark difference from the original Wonder Years. I will agree with you there.
Yeah.
I think it is sometimes detrimental, though, too. I think I actually was going to call out the same thing. I think the callbacks are kind of just like, ooh, I don't know. I don't know if this show needs those callbacks. It just doesn't. It started to feel a little bit at times like, did you ever watch Everybody Loves Chris? Everybody Hates Chris?
Oh, a couple times. And yeah, I actually, I see what you
almost
mean.
Almost similar, except that one takes place in the 90s. This one, the difference is it takes place in the 60s. My biggest beef with this show is actually how it looks, because I think for me it's too crisp. It's just too, it looks too polished, and there's something about it that just that for me, I think that for me is what takes it the show away from me. And that is not for me to complain. I'm not complaining about the content yet. This is just me from a visual point of view, right? Because I think content wise I think the show is actually, I think it's cute. I think the show is that's the word I would describe it. It's cute. Is this something I'm gonna keep watching? Probably not, but I do think the third episode for me is kind of the one that kind of made me finally say, it's like, okay, this is not a bad show. I like the show. Which is the mom has a porn stash that the kids find and stuff. And it starts playing into like not just we start now playing with gender politics here, right? Where it was when we first see the porn stash, we assume it's the father's porn stash, right? That's what the kid, Dean, assumes. But instead, when he finds out, it's just like it's his mom because, you know, his dad used to go touring. So she would, like, you know, look at the porn to, like, arouse herself and think of her father, her husband. And that was gross. But she was thinking of her husband. And, you know, he's learning about sexuality through the eyes of his mom, which I thought was super refreshing. I don't think I'd ever seen that, like, in a ABC sitcom or a sitcom in general, right? A family sitcom. But the part that won me over the most, though, was because he ends up taking these lessons that his mom taught, and now he's, like, spreading it all over school. He gets in trouble. And now the parents of Kisa are, like, basically calling him a degenerate and shit. And, like, they're calling out the mom when they find out that she's been teaching him this stuff. And, like, he was so proud of his mom for kind of being empowered. But she keeps her mouth shut in that moment because she's just like, you know what? Like, is this not a fight worth having? And it's a lesson that he learns. It's just like, okay, I see. You taught me a lesson that only I was supposed to know. But, like, you don't want me to turn out like this. That I don't know. It was a good episode. I'm doing a disservice explaining it. But... And I think it's just like, ooh, if this show continues to hit, like, some of these kind of moments, this show has the potential to be good. You know, to your point of just like, okay, but is it a Wonder Years show, though? That's what I'm saying. It's just like, I don't know if this needed to be a Wonder Years show.
Yeah. That's the question that I want to ask, too. And I guess the one thing I want to say overall, too, is that I thought that the show, I didn't really get a good sense of Dean as much as I wanted to. The first episode is really concerned with giving you a good introduction to everybody else, that I feel like I almost got a better sense of everybody else more than Dean. Like, especially, like, with his father, mm-hmm. And that whole, like, baseball thing. Like, that whole joke of him and the coach just, like, talking over each other and giving the advice to Dean, was so focused on the father and that role he was playing that, you know, it was like this was happening to Dean, and yet I didn't really even get to experience it as much from Dean's eyes.
Yeah, I agreed also on that point.
Which is something that the original Wonder Years never really made me feel. It was very much Kevin, and Kevin was always front and center, and everything was being experienced from him. So it's almost like, to me, that the original Kevin, original Wonder Years was so good at doing it through his eyes, mm-hmm. but this new Wonder Years isn't really necessarily doing it from his eyes, even though he's the narrator and it's supposed to be. I feel like it's more so just telling everybody else's story, if that mm-hmm. makes sense.
No, yeah.
It's not necessarily from his eyes. It's just like a regular TV show that is going from character to character to character, but yeah. It happens to have a narrator.
I agree with you. So... where the original Wonder Years, the show, Kevin was always your main character and everybody else was secondary or tertiary to him. In this one, this Wonder Year seems to be more in the style of like an ensemble cast.
Yes.
Where a lot of these other actors are getting ample screen time and they're telling, we're hearing their stories. All the differences, we're just getting a narration from Don Cheadle.
Yeah.
Which, to your point, does that make this a Wonder Years show?
Yeah. You know? So that's the thing, too. And this is something that we've talked about in a lot of other episodes where we see something and we're like, so this is called the Wonder Years, but is it the Wonder Years?
Mm-hmm.
And why did they call it the Wonder Years when it's kind of very much its own thing?
Right. Well,
I'm just going to say right now, I don't think this is the Wonder Years, and I don't even know why it has to call itself the Wonder Years, other than the fact that it feels like it's a response to the first one somehow.
Mm-hmm. Well, you keep saying that. What do you think it's responding to?
The fact that this story wasn't told and that they wanted the opportunity to tell it, and that here's a perfect example of, you know, like, oh, a classic middle American family story that was told at one point, but they neglected to tell a different side of it.
Yeah, but I don't, but
that's the only reason why I would think that they would call it the Wonder Years. I mean, and having a narrator is nothing new.
No, you're right. I agree.
Telling a story about your childhood or having an ensemble cast about a family and anything is nothing new. So why call it the Wonder Years?
Yeah, the only reason I thought that they probably decided to stick to this family, this time period, was because of what's going on in American politics at the moment, right? Like, we are seeing like a very, very socially active and a very politically divided. We're in a very tumultuous time period right now, politically speaking. And I think the creators of the show felt it's just like, okay, but let's go back in time and show it's just like, let's show, see, I guess here's where they fail. It's just like, they're just showing it's just like, nothing has changed, I guess, in like 60 years, right? Is my math right?
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
So
almost, but okay. That's great. That's separate from why they'll call it the Wonder Years.
Well, yeah, in terms of why calling it the Wonder Years, I mean, outside of just like, I don't know. I don't know. I don't think I. So the reason I actually went out of my way to watch the show The Call was because The Call is one of those shows where like the world is, there's so much around the world that's happening around you, but this kid is just focused on one thing. Episodes 1 and 2 were very much, episode 2 more so, right? Martin Luther King had just died. Dean is all up in his head that he saw his best friend kissing the girl of his dreams, right? He doesn't care about what's going on with Martin Luther King and like the impact that it's having on the Black community. He's not self-absorbed. I think that just has a wrong connotation, but he's just in his own head about what's happening right now. That did feel like a very Wonder Years type thing, but it also felt a little forced. Because you started off right there in the season, like that in the very beginning. We didn't need that in the pilot episode of the original Wonder Years, right? The original Wonder Years was literally just him starting his first day of school and getting in trouble. And then before he like gets like his ass whooped from his dad, which I think was the lead up to, you know, we discover that Winnie's brother passed away in the war. So, yeah, I think structurally, I don't know. I guess it's just like, yeah, I agree with you. I don't know. I don't know why this is called the Wonder Years. I don't think it needed to be the Wonder Years. You know, that's, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think it might be one of those things where they're like, well, no one's going to watch this show unless you call it something and then you give them a reason to watch it.
I mean, people, I mean, look at Cougar Town, right? It had a terrible title and people still watched it, so.
Well, yeah, but people are more opt to watch something that has some sort of familiarity with them or they have some sort of, you know, positive expectation of than take a gamble on something new. Right. So I think that maybe ABC just felt like, well, you know, people love the Wonder Years. So if we call it the Wonder Years, we'll guarantee people will watch this.
Yeah. 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 I mean, you're right. And I think at the end of the day, that becomes kind of a disservice to these characters, right? Because you're like, you're in a shadow that you don't need to be under.
Absolutely. Well, I like you said, they probably felt like they had to, live up to these expectations of the show, but that they had to write their show comparatively to that one instead of just tell their own story.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you have to, like, you want to do things the way someone else did them. Yeah, like, yeah, you have to live in a shadow. And it's almost like doing a disservice to you because you're not focusing on what's most important, which is just telling your own story.
Right.
So, and that's the thing, too, is that I'm watching this new Wonder Years, which is perfectly fine. But I'm like, why is it the Wonder Years when it's very much its own thing?
Mm-hmm.
Very different tone and everything. And who is this show for? And I was, like, trying to figure out, like, well, if they called it the Wonder Years, who is this show for?
Yeah, so I'm so glad you asked it because I was also wondering that as I was watching. I was just like, who is this show for? Because the generation that would have appreciated the 60s, like, I don't think they're watching ABC now. Aren't they watching just Fox News? And more importantly, I also not think that they're going out of their way to watch a Black family in the 60s. I just don't. I'm sorry.
Such a generalization.
It is, but unfortunately, I just feel like this is just how a lot of people are thinking now. They were very polarized, I just feel like. You know what I mean? So,
well, I mean, don't let yourself be.
Well,
like, come on.
I mean, my opinions on this podcast are, I sometimes say things, I always amp it up a little bit, right?
Yeah, he but wants this hate mail. So,
but
yeah.
I think the problem also here becomes, I don't know if, so to that point, what I was just saying, though, I don't know if at the same time they were maybe fishing possibly for a little bit of controversy and saying, oh, my God, they're turning Wonder Years into woke culture for the press. Do you know what I mean?
Maybe.
Like, they're kind of... It is a move to take the Wonder Years, which is a very, very milquetoast show, and turning mm-hmm. and making it about a black family. Like, that is a move. Like, you are... People... I think they wanted people to talk about that. But I think this show is also so vanilla that it just, like, doesn't incite any of that possible attention.
Yeah, well, you know, at the end of the day, too, like, who's watching ABC shows, new shows that are released weekly? I mean, you know, let's face it, everybody's got Netflix, everybody's got Amazon, everybody's got all these things, and everybody's watching shows like Succession or...
I will never watch Succession.
Other shows. I don't know. I've tried not to watch TV. That it's like, they also have to compete with all of this. And it's like, well, how can we compete? When we also just kind of, we're ABC, we're owned by Disney. We can't tell like anything too controversial and all this stuff. So what do? You call it the Wonder Years and hope people will watch it because it's simply called the Wonder Years. That's literally how I feel. But it's also like ABC's audiences, I don't know if, like, I feel like more so older people, you know, boomers, still watch episodic like shows that are released weekly on channels like CBS, ABC, NBC. So I think it's for that age group. But I'm on the other side where I don't think everyone in that age group is as close-minded as Rolando believes. And they're actually excited for this. And they're actually excited to see stories that but they might have relate to or that they didn't get that they grew up with and a time that they can connect with and share it with, you know, maybe their children or their grandchildren.
I feel like if Eddie were here, he would have been fighting with me right now for what I said about, like, but I do.
Yeah,
I know. Yeah, it did sound harsh what I was saying, but I'm sorry. This is what the demographics are showing. And, like, you know, no. But the other thing I will say, though, in terms of what do people watch on ABC, I just realized, because I was racking my head while you were talking. It's just like, what the hell are people, because Modern Family is over. Mm-hmm. It's The Bachelor, I think. That's like their main, source of income, I think, on ABC, the channel. Like, I think that's their most watched show. They might, I think, maybe Dancing with the Stars, I think, is also ABC's.
Man,
thing, but like sucks. You know, yeah, the state of network TV is kind of like dismal at the moment. Like,
yeah,
I think The Masked Singer was the most watched show.
Yeah, oh my god, and The Voice, like, people watch this crap.
Oh, The Voice, that's also, is that ABC or is that NBC?
That might be NBC. It could, but be. It's like that's what is on these channels. Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
Other than sports, they're really amping up their sports.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, they have to. And Disney owns ESPN, so like they don't.
Yeah, seriously.
They're not hurt.
Fucking Disney, man.
So yeah. So I don't know. I guess that brings up the final question, right? Based off of what you've seen of this new Wonder Years, do you think this was needed?
As a Wonder Years show, no, absolutely not. I think the Wonder Years was perfectly fine as how it was. And I think that it's going to be really hard to replicate it, especially since, you know, we've just made so many different types of shows and we've, you know, broke even further ground since mm-hmm. the original Wonder Years that it's just hard to replicate what they did today and not just come off as passé. Mm-hmm. But I think we need more stories focused around non-white families. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Do we need to call it the Wonder Years? No, I mean, no. Yeah. Do I think that I want to see a story about a black family, but set it so far back? I mean, I'd like to see more in more contemporary times, but I'm just happy to see stories that are different that haven't been as frequently told. So as a Wonder Years remake, reboot, whatever, no. But this show, I'm willing to give a shot with what we have to see where it goes. I think it's perfectly fine and enjoyable. What about you, Rolando?
When I mentioned, I watched these in reverse, right? I watched the new stuff first and then go back to the old. When I was watching it, I was thinking, like, oh, okay, this is like a fine... This is fine. It's fine. I know. And I also do like the black family point of view, I think is one worth, I think it's worth a TV show. Right. And I think that they were exploring enough of like the racial politics back then to like make me interested. I think it's when I was rewatching then the original one, and I kind of was just like saw, it's just like there's something missing in this new one that the original one had. I can't put my finger on it, and I can't say that I watched enough, rewatched enough of the original one to like place my finger on it. But there just is. I don't know what that spark is. I don't know if it's that Kevin Arnold's actor, Fred Savage, just had that spark that, like, you know, unfortunately the kid who plays Dean doesn't. I don't think it's that, but it could be that. I don't know. I don't know what it is. But then it made me discuss, just like, I don't know if then this was needed, because now I don't think it should have been the Wonder Years. Maybe it should have been just a different kind of TV show. You know?
I absolutely think it should have been a different type of TV show. And I think that the thing that I would pinpoint my finger on it would be that the way that the original kind of, it's the way that they told the story. I think the new one is just trying to be very contemporary in its style, and it's trying to be, you know, funny and sarcastic and witty and fit in a lot and like be like fast editing, you know, fast storytelling. And like you said, the original Wonder Years was kind of boring because it was a simpler approach to telling a story. And I think that that, for me at least, works in the favor of the older show, because I'm also just a fan of not like feeling pressure to be cool and make a TV show like everybody else is doing it and do it like 30 Rock or whatever, and just telling a story.
Right.
So that's what I would say. So
I mean,
but
yeah, a contemporary show that reminded me of the original Wonder Years, despite the fact that it didn't have any of the narration, was Freaks and Geeks. Obviously, I think they're even different time periods, right? They may not be. I don't remember.
No, not that
similar.
Further.
Okay, so but that was another one where like, it wasn't, there were no callbacks or anything. It was a very almost dry show where the jokes, everything seemed organic, right?
Yep.
And this one, it feels like sometimes you're just, the new Wonder Years, you just sometimes feel like you're watching, you know, it's aware, it's a sitcom.
Yes.
You know?
Good point. Yeah.
So that's it. And I'm not trying to rag on the show, because I actually thought, like I said, I thought the show was cute. I laughed. I was enjoying the show. But it's when, in comparison to the original, where I could say it's just like, oh, there's just, what is it? And I think it's that. I think that's it. It's just, it knows it's a sitcom and it's trying to be a sitcom. And as a result, the Wonder Years wasn't that.
Yeah. And again, I think it just is trying really hard for people to like love it, you know? And it's like, just tell the story, guys.
Yeah.
So, okay. But did you watch the new Wonder Years? What did you think? Do you agree with Nicole? Do you agree with Rolando? Do you agree with neither of us? Do you agree with both of us? Let us know your thoughts. And we love hearing from you. Like we said earlier in the episode, you can email us your thought, remakesreboots revivals@gmail.com, or you can hit us up on social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, at Remakes Podcast. We're on all that. And for the last time, we're going to remind you of that phone number that you could call in and share your thoughts. Rolando, do you have that number handy for our audience?
Yes, I do. That number you can call us is 862-248-2326. That's 862-248-2326.
We look forward to hearing from you and for being back next week to get an early start on the Christmas season when we cover the new Disney Plus Home Alone. I'm so excited.
Oh, that's right. I forgot that's what we were covering next week. Okay, cool.
Yeah. Exciting. Yeah, it should be a fun one. But yeah. So thank you for listening. And until next week, stay
original.